Look, I think there's been very good changes in terms of the constitution, recognizing women's rights, basic human rights, etc. Women no longer being minors, having the right to own land, no longer being under the chief. Very significant on in terms of achievements. I think it falls short in terms of implementation. And I think what we're seeing in some cases, you see the traditional chiefs making a comeback in the rural areas, etc., in the townships, patriarchy. So on that level, you see the difference between what's on paper, the Bill of Rights, and actually happening. I think, though, there's also been important changes in terms of women's status. A single woman, single mothers. I think even women living together, in terms of gay relationships. But women having common law relationships, what is called fat and sit. Remember this thing of you not having to be married. I mean, those were tendencies because of migrant labor, that sometimes the man would come to the city, have a family in the city, but he would also have a family in the rural area. But I think those kinds of things, we no longer have such a thing called illegitimate children, which I think is a very derogatory thing, you know what I mean? So I think the new constitution acknowledges that. So I think that's a very powerful thing in terms of the changes, you know, that have been very real. You know, the fact that you can own your, use your own surname, your children have your own surname with pride, and there's no culture to come and tell you that, you know, you're living in sin, and I think on that level it's very important. But I think there's also been, as a result of that, this, what is it called, femicide? The violence against women and children because of these rights that women have and the fact that men can't really deal with it. There's not been a mass-based campaign to engage the two, and men see it as an individual thing and not as a social issue. So, I mean, husbands or boyfriends killing their wives or their girlfriends, their children, and then killing themselves because of this. Because it is a power struggle. It's a power struggle in the home, in the workplace, etc. So I think that is, you know, there's been real changes. There's been real acknowledgement of, as I say, particular kind of relationships and so forth. So that, I mean, if you have a common law relationship and your husband or your partner dies, you have access to the house. You know, you have certain rights. So I think that's been very important. But we need to go, I think we still need to do a lot of work in terms of implementing those rights, especially in the rural areas where I think often the women keep quiet because they could be ejected by the chief once the husband dies, you know. So I think, again, the question of implementation is very important. This came up as well last year. I did a thing on sexuality, and I thought there was a group of women from KwaZulu-Natal who only spoke Zulu, and I thought they would be very conservative, but they weren't. They were very supportive. What they raised, though, was that they don't have an advice center in terms of somebody who can go to, who can, say, fight on their behalf against the chief when they take their things. They don't have anybody to turn to who can, you know, champion their cause, because very often they know their rights, but they're in a very weak power position, you know, to really affect them. Look, as I was saying, the first resolution, although COSAT was formed in 1985, the first resolution on women is in 1987, and it raises the need to organize women, the specifics, employment patterns related to women in terms of the particular kind of oppression and exploitation that women suffer in terms of their color, their class, and their gender, right? So there's an impetus to that. I think as more and more women develop in the trade union movement, they rise in the ranks as shop stewards, as leaders, they get exposed, there's levels of awareness, etc., and so forth. That is increased. But I think the problem is there's not very much done in terms of developing women as women for themselves. So although as a result of one of its affiliates, SACAW, strike for parental rights in the late 80s, the code of conduct on sexual harassment in the late 90s, right? Even the right to choose, you know, that women have now. Those were not done really in terms of looking at them within the gender context in the home. Why do women have paternity, or why should men have paternity rights, you know, so that we then begin to look at the changing relations within the workplace and also then in the home and in society. And it's also not done in a mass-based campaign way, so that we're challenging men's attitudes and women's attitudes, because women reproduce sexism, women reproduce patriarchy, etc. And so I think consequently in the movement you still have these patterns of patriarchy. You still have a lot of the problems. Questions of the right to choose isn't seen as a right to free women to participate more, you know, in terms of having control of their own bodies, etc. And it's still left to the individual woman in her shack or in her township to make a decision like that. And we know that women in isolation are bombarded by religion, culture, socialization, etc. All those things are pressures on women in terms of them making choices for themselves. So I think although COSATU has contributed, there's a lot of women MPs in parliament, etc., we haven't gone that critical mile to really shift from just rights-based to a more meaningful engagement of women as actors in their own right.
You're talking about that you sort of mentioned a bit of a gap between rights that have been achieved and the implementation of them. How has COSATU engaged with that question?
I don't think it has, in all seriousness. I think COSATU has the potential in terms of its mass base to really have developed a women's movement. Yeah, I don't think we've had a feminist movement. I think we've had national liberation movements. We've had women who struggle against apartheid, but there have been subcommittees or an appendage or dependent on the national liberation, you know, but they've not been like movements in themselves in terms of what does this, what kind of liberation do we want as women in terms of that. And I think since 94 there's not been, because the only way you're going to effect change is if you do have a mass campaign to really even inform women of their rights, but then also to buttress women implementing those kinds of demands. You need that kind of strong movement to pressurize and to say, this woman's not alone, you know, she's got the backing in terms of that. And I think that's where it's failed, it's fallen, you know, it's really fallen short in terms of, as I say, even the right to choose, you know. You can want to make that choice. If you don't have a clinic in your township, you can't really effect the right to choose, and then you sit with an unwanted pregnancy or you go and have a backstreet abortion. And if you can't pay for it, besides Mary Stopes, there's nowhere else to go, you know. So I think those are critical in terms of making people's rights something that will improve their standard of living and break out of the... For me, it's also about breaking out of poverty, women breaking out of their poverty. You know, it's not this individual right. It's about how you uplift the society when people can say, look, we want to decide when we have children, how many. You know, it's a much more broader social issue.
What are some of the reasons, do you think, that COSATU has failed?
Look, I think it's the general orientation of COSATU. I think it hasn't really taken up a number of things, least of all patriarchy. Patriarchy is but one of it. But I think patriarchy is also linked to the status quo. Patriarchy is very resilient, you know. It's preceded colonialism, capitalism, yeah. It's resilient because you can have women's rights and still have a very patriarchal society. So it's quite an interesting thing, because if it comes to, if you look at the gear, the particular macroeconomic strategy, COSATU was against it and couldn't really effect that change. Government just said that's not negotiable, and that was it, right? The biggest march, I think people talked about 95, was the march for the LRA, including the right to strike over retrenchment. Couldn't effect that. So within that context, you still also have within COSATU the status quo is very much maintained, right? And unless women take up patriarchy in a real sense, ruling classes, including patriarchal systems, are not going to be overthrown voluntaristically So I think for me there's a real problem there, and it's linked to the politics. You know, it's really linked to the politics, because I think if Kosatu can break out of that, it could begin to engage a range of things, including how we're dealing with women's issues, women's rights, let alone patriarchy, just even the basic, the basic rights.
Now, how have social movements, how have the social movements that we've talked about so much at this conference, how have they served women's interests particularly?
I think they've become also an impetus which has initially been, what you find is initially the impetus comes from the community, it's women, the women lead. As the struggle progresses, it gets taken over by men. Women are still the majority in the organization. To the extent the issue is raised, it's raised in general. So we take up water, but we don't say, how is water gendered? Who walks for water? Or who walks for when you don't have sugar or you don't have food? Who is the one who does that? Or you don't have health care? Who is the one who runs, the dog bites a child and there's no medicine? Who takes the child? You know what I mean? It's not gendered in that sense. So I think in general the issues are reflecting women's issues and women's needs. They're not being taken up specifically in a gendered way. At the same time, I also think that the social movements are reproducing patterns of patriarchy. And I think questions of internal democracy, questions of gender, questions of power need to be taken up, you know. In one of the social movements, the need for a woman thing as a subcommittee even to deal with some of these issues, not posing the question of a woman's movement. All we wanted was to for women to look at, as issues are taken up, that they're gendered. You know, it's a pressure group within. And the response was quite, like a ton of bricks. You know, people are quite instinctive in terms of when it comes to patriarchy, just like the bosses are when it comes to their power. So I think it's an important issue, because if we don't take it up in the process of struggle, you know, we're going to have this two-stage position where, again, we face through this thing. And I think it's really, it's a critical issue for the movement to take up now. Yeah. It's got to be, I think there's a problem also in people's analysis. You know, as I was saying, they have politics, and then they have gender. It's an add-on, you know what I mean? It's not in the whole process of the analysis of, you know, when this woman was talking about the TAC, she was talking about class and gender and how those two, you know, two sides of the same thing. We don't always have that kind of analysis. It's always an add-on.
Do you see greater potential for future incorporation of gender at the heart of analysis and action from Kosatu or from the social movements?
Look, I don't think Kosatu's where I work in the unit. I don't think Kosatu's at the cutting edge at the moment in terms of the struggles. There are debates in Kosatu on whether there should be, in some of the affiliates, on whether there should even be gender structures anymore. Right? So this is really a problem. In other structures, it's become a 50-50 issue of representation, and that's where it stays. But it hasn't transformed into collective bargaining issues, so that, for example, we demand the right to childcare facilities at a creche, or the right to women to go and have their pap smears. You know what I mean? Their time off. I think because the social movements are militant at the cutting edge, taking up the things, there's energy, there's vibrancy, there's struggle. It gives us more of an opportunity to take up those things. You know, you can't take up those things in isolation of the struggles. So I think it's a real challenge. At the same time, I think there is more of an awareness. Because although, as you say, there wasn't much discussion on gender, there is much more of an awareness, I think, even in Kenya College, of the need to deal with gender, the need to deal with patriarchy. In the last winter school, it focused on gender and neoliberalism. And in the run-up to the workshop, the preparations was to get groups together of women, to prepare them, to look at how the workshops would be held, etc. You know, so it was very much a part of form and content throughout. And the women were incredible. You know, the women were really, really incredible. And for the first time, we had a discussion on sexuality. a discussion of the origins of the family, that we didn't always have families the way we have, that we had matriarchal societies in Africa and elsewhere, you know what I mean, that we haven't only had patriarchy. So there's clearly been a lot of, it's been very exciting because there's a lot more space. It's still left to too few women, I think. But, I mean, it's really nice. Someone like you says, I want to talk about gender. I mean, it's like, you know, really, it's a very positive. And I think more younger people are open. The older guys are still quite into being clannish and tribal. And
there's entrenched privileges there that you don't want to give up. People recognize very quickly what they're giving up.
Precisely.
So they're very quick to defend.
And it comes to, and they were saying in the workshop, okay, we can recognize your position as women, but don't expect us to do housework. Don't expect us to look after, to wash nappies. And we were saying, what do you think this is about then? Do you think there's something else? You know, that kind of... But I think for the first time there was this head on, and it was the social movements. And there was a group who were trying to maintain their positions, very defensive, you know. And I mean, being shocked. You know, with women saying, you see, one of the articles says to women, you need to touch yourself as a woman, because how would you be able to get a man or a woman to please you? Now, I mean, Turner, who speaks? Do you know what I mean? This was like shocking for some people. It was like, you know, it was a shock to the system, you know, that there was this kind of a discussion. But I think the onus is on women to take the initiative, to put the pressure. Because slaves must free themselves. You know what I mean? The master never frees you. You have to take the initiative to push the boundaries, etc. And I think the onus, in the same way that we need to do it with men who are progressive and who are obviously conscious, I think the leading role must be women. You know what I mean? They must be able to say, we're not prepared to accept this in the home. We're not prepared to accept this in the organization. And until they do that and push the boundaries, you can't ask. Nobody can free you. You know the thing of the domestic, you know, I thought the presentation on domestic workers was appalling. You know, this white man talks about domestic workers, and he talks about them in a way as if they are victims. Black women are not victims in South Africa. You know, they struggle. They struggle to survive. But he doesn't look at their forms of organization that exist. You know, their burial societies, their stock files, their, you know, their independent churches. They have a whole social gathering of networks of, somebody dies, the body gets organized to the Eastern Cape. So these are not people who are victims. And I think it's like a very condescending, patronizing thing to think that you bringing this truth, you know, because these black women obviously shame, feel sorry. You know, it was a guilt trip. I was appalled, really appalled by it. I think he's also very much into this bleeding heart, feeling sorry for people, as opposed to people as social actors in their own right, where we help them to free themselves. Because women must emancipate themselves. Domestic workers must emancipate themselves. But if you look, he's also talking about they must bring, if you remember when I asked the question, he's saying they must bring these things into the union. The problem is the union form is hostile to women, is alien. The union form can't adapt. You need to find other ways to see how do you connect with this, because it's clear that these women can connect. Where is the problem? And I think the problem is with us in terms of we saying you must fit into this kind of a box.
Yeah.